Please include the worldwide outreach of issues, etc. in your year-end giving. With 3 weeks left in 2019, we're $110,000 short of expenses. You can make a secure online gift at issuesetc.org. You can also make a year-end tax-deductible donation by check, make your check payable to Issues, etc., and send it to Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Thanks for listening, and thanks for keeping us in mind at the end of the year.
I could hear her say, "Stay at home.
Welcome back to Issues, Etc. Unless it's brought to our attention, many of us don't even question it. The model of the family is now very firmly set in our sociology, in our the fabric of our society, that we're talking about a man and a woman. Some of us still cling to that old binary, who are essentially interchangeable with one another. One could earn the paycheck, the other one could earn the paycheck. Maybe in most cases, both of them earn the paycheck. And there are a few imperatives attached to all that. You have a duty to go to college to, say, answer the question, what do you want to do when you grow up, and eventually earn that paycheck. Now, the paycheck size may vary, but that's kind of your American duty to do that. Where the kids, your eventual children, fit into all of that, we don't often stop and think about it. We outsource them to people who we pay to raise them, sometimes from the earliest ages. We're going to be talking about women working outside the home. Joining us to do so on this Monday, December the 9th, Rebecca Curtis, pastor's wife and mother of 8 children. She has a master's degree from Concordia Seminary, and she's co-author of the book Ladylike: Living Biblically. Rebecca, welcome back to Issues, Etc.
Hello, thanks.
Why do we need to begin with the parents? And here we're talking about both parents' obligation to provide for their children.
We have to start our conversation about women working from the perspective of the parents' duties, because the children's good is what we have in mind. And when we start prioritizing parents' interests and preferences and comforts over the needs of their children, that's when things start getting messed up. When the first goal is not what is the best for our kids, but how can we kind of get what our kids basically need in ways that are the least annoying to us? That's the wrong framework for developing a family structure that works.
Then, before we get into the subject of women working outside the home, we kind of have to lay a foundation. First, talk about the natural relationship between a husband and a wife, or a father and a mother in a marriage.
Sure. So, first of all, I think we wanted to observe that we are talking here about families in which both parents are present, which is not the case for a lot of kids, unfortunately. But in those situations where you have mom and dad both there, present for their kids, trying to figure out how to best provide for them and care for them, we are going to be a little bit, we're going to be very essentialist, actually. We're going to say, dads are strong. They are the engine of the family. They are the ones who are going to provide the basic resources because they are the best at doing that. What the wife and mother brings to this is flexibility. She keeps the husband from overdoing it, from becoming too rigid, from not being able to adapt to all the curveballs that life throws. And so just like if you are, you know, if you're playing Legos with your kids, Legos are a kind of limited construction medium because they're so blocky, right? You can build something pretty strong with Legos because of the way they interlock, but you can't build something that is resistant to certain forces because Legos don't have any flexibility built into them. It's the wife and mother's job to bring the flexibility to a family that absorbs the shock that naturally comes in our sinful world where things get messed up, to allow the husband not to break things by being strong. And then he reinforces her flexibility and keeps it from becoming too flexible, prevents things from losing their shape, from not having a standard that solidifies things and makes them reliable and safe for their children. So you have the husband providing the strength component and the wife providing the flexibility component that makes a structure, a family structure, that is sound and reliable and that can hold up against various problems that arise.
Rebecca Curtis is our guest. We're talking about women working outside the home when we come back. She also talks about the need for the father to specialize and for the mother to be that flexible generalist. We'll find out why next.
Lutheranism in the public square. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Ed Crusom offers Bible-based, Christ-focused Christmas ornaments in various sizes for church and home. Use our Jesse Tree collection to teach your children this Advent and see our new premium ornaments, a crucifixion tableau, angel and shepherds, the Holy Family, Epiphany, and much more. Visit adcrusom.com for unique and theologically sound greeting cards, jewelry, gifts, churchwares, banners, certificates, and housewares. That's adcrusom.com.
We're discussing women working outside the home with Rebecca Curtis, co-author of Ladylike Living Biblically. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. In about 40 minutes, we'll conclude today's show talking with Dr. Alexander Riley about woke campus outrage. Rebecca, you also discussed the need for the father to specialize, only to explain what that means, and for the mother to remain that flexible generalist. Why is that?
Specialization allows him to have a strength, something that provides the energy and resources that the family needs to run. To support him in that, it's very helpful to have someone who is able to pick up the loose ends, to notice things that he maybe doesn't notice in his consideration of the big picture and the basic needs, and to help out around the edges, to fill in gaps, and to make his work easier for him. When you have both of those components in action, you can have a really strong and effective system that works well. But you have to have people who are willing to do both of those things. Someone who is willing to specialize, to become very strong in something, and someone who is willing to back him up and to do kind of the behind-the-scenes work, the things that aren't as impressive, the things that people don't know need to be done in order for him to be able to do what he does.
How has our post-industrial, and I almost want to say post-pre-industrial, post-pre-industrial society and economy, how has it altered this natural relationship between father, husband, mother, wife?
This is a really important question to understand because it helps us to see that this is not just a question about how women are spending their time. And I think it's in his book, Out of the Ashes, Anthony Eslin talks about this. And he says that the Industrial Revolution took fathers out of the home. In the Industrial Revolution is the beginning of the home ceasing to be the primary locus of production, where people kind of stop living in an internal subsistence sort of way and start going other places to produce things. So in the Industrial Revolution, factory work increased in a major way because that's what was happening. Everything was mechanized. We had machines building things rather than people building things. You had people building the machines to build things, and then people running the machines that were building things, and none of this can happen at your house anymore. You have to go to a place where all these machines are housed and run them. So there are far fewer men who are generally available to their families, even though they're busy working. They're still there. But if you've got a guy who's going to a factory job and also increasingly to office jobs, men just aren't around anymore. They aren't at home. So it changes the nature of the family structure and what a household looks like.
Then how much has our thinking, I mean, if you give us some perspective here, how much our thinking about these basic natural relationships in the family changed from that subsistence or home-based work? Dad works, but he's still around the house. Mom works, she's still around the house, to what we have today. How much has our thinking changed?
Well, instead of having a product to show for your work, you have a paycheck to show for it. And, you know, then there are a lot of other historical considerations that factor in as well. You have the world wars changing the balance of men and women at home and at work and at war, and then changing people's experiences and expectations. And then you have the sexual revolution, which kind of has two components. You have the Helen Gurley Brown component, which has sexual mores for women changing drastically. And you have the Betty Friedan component, where she says, what are women doing at home anyway? It's not fun. It's lonely. It makes them dependent on men because men have all the money. And women are better than that, and they want to do more interesting things, and they want to get paychecks too. So now we have all of work being understood and its end result being a paycheck, not something good that you have made in which you can take pride, not something that you actually use in itself, but something you're simply compensated for. And so everybody wants that. Everybody wants that good feeling of bringing home money. And especially when you factor in all the complaints of second wave feminism, that women need to not be dependent on men, and that it's, you know, somehow degrading for women to be at home taking care of their families, there was just no hope. There was no hope for the traditional family structure where women are primarily caregivers and men are primarily producers and providers. Not to say that women were not producers. Women have always wanted to produce things, and that's still a problem that women who stay home have, asking themselves, what am I producing? What am I doing here? Because I know it's not a paycheck. And that's what everybody else has to show at the end of the day. So figuring out all these things gets extremely complicated and frustrating and very difficult to nail down what the real problems are, because so much of our lives are tied up in them now.
I want to talk a little bit about that Betty Friedan. Well, I'm going to call it the Betty Friedan lie, which is that women aren't really doing anything at home except these menial chores, especially when you factor children in there, Rebecca. It has always been, with respect to caring for your children, that you don't see a product. It's not like you're churning butter or going out and and working in the garden and bringing in the vegetables. Raising children, the benefits and the product there is largely intangible, but far more valuable than carrots or butter.
Absolutely. And I think that that reality will not allow itself to be ignored. Every week, it seems like I run across someone I think last week in The Atlantic, there was another article about how childcare in America is a total disaster. Nobody can afford it. It costs more than a state university in a lot of states. A year of childcare, daycare costs more than a college education. That, you know, parents are just at wit's end trying to fund their babysitters. And at the same time, childcare providers are among the worst paid workers in America. I don't know how any of us can sleep at night. The people who are raising our children are so poorly compensated. There was a Wall Street Journal study a few years ago that showed that childcare workers are paid less than animal care workers. This is what we've won for ourselves by putting all of these bad ideas together. But by the inability to see the value in caring for our children and raising them not as an outsourced household task that anybody can do, but taking that duty upon ourselves, being willing to do that, being willing to sacrifice a bigger paycheck and a bigger house and whatever other things people have traded for this, not being able to see the worth in that has gotten us to this situation where now everybody is saying, this isn't working. We can't afford to pay it, and yet the people doing it can barely afford to live because of how little we pay them. That's the fruit that all of these ideas combined has borne, and we need to be honest with ourselves about that.
So that brings us to the big question this foundation laid. When we talk about women working outside the home, what does that mean in terms of examining it in a moral framework? What's the definition of working outside the home now?
Right. This is just how we understand work. This is the sum of all those ideas. Work is what you do to get a check. certainly not work equals force times distance, which is a more fundamental way of understanding it. If the only work that really matters is the kind you get paid for, then of course that's what people are going to run to. And in the course of all the social changes over the last 100 or so years of history, and changes to the economy, changes to people's expectations about sexual mores and ethics, this is where we land. But I think perhaps the most useful way of understanding it is in one of the prophets of our own age, Senator Elizabeth Warren. I cannot recommend highly enough her book, The Two Income Trap. Now, we all know Senator Warren is a colossal leftist, and she is in no way some crazy housewife saying it's so bad that women go to work. This book that she wrote outlines all of these ideas, and she says that in order to gain more immediate financial stability, a lot of women decided, you know, as the workforce became more and more open to them, both socially and in other respects, more and more of them decided, hey, I'm going to go to work. And this is also built into their having decided to, I'm going to go into debt to go to college. Now you've got women needing money in two directions. They've got to pay for the education that they decided to go ahead and take out on loan, and they want more financial stability going into the future. So they go to work. So you got mom and dad both working. And there are a lot of other things that go into that. They do it because they want a nicer house and a better school district. And in order to get the loan for that house, they have to have a higher income. So you've got, they both have to work. Okay, fine. We can accept all these things. Then what happens when you do need a caregiver? When you have a baby, when somebody in your family gets sick, the grandparents start needing more help. What happens if you even have a baby who is sick herself or is handicapped in some way? In all of these situations now, you need a full-time caregiver. Well, what are you supposed to do? You're roped into this way of life where you've got to pay off your housing loan, you've got to pay off your student loans. You are tied up with those two incomes on which you have built all of your investments and everything that makes your life run. Senator Warren, of course, her advice is not going to be women need to not work. And she says that. She's like, if you want to work, work. But you need to know that this is the risk you're taking when you do that. It is back to being a more rigid structure. It has less flexibility in it. It is not as secure. And she says that what happens to these people is they end up going into bankruptcy. She's done the research. I take her word for it. The book got published. It's very popular with conservatives because it is honest about these things. Senator Warren doesn't have to prove her creds as a person who thinks women are intelligent and women are capable and that, you know, she is totally on board with. If you don't want to stay home with your kids, hey, you know, fine. No prob. If you want to stay home with your kids, that's great. But what she's saying is that by more people adopting that more rigid two-income model, it has overhauled our society to the point that it's harder to choose not to, because everybody has a higher cost of living. Everybody has to pay more for the schools they want, for the house they want, for this relative prosperity that comes at the cost of increased risk to family stability.
Rebecca Curtis is our guest. We're talking about women working outside the home. In addition to all that, she also says that we have a one-size-fits-all educational system for men and women, both education and socialization. We'll find out why that's important next.
The facts are hard to spin. Planned Parenthood's name and reputation are intertwined with abortion because it is the nation's largest abortion provider and promoter.
Carol Tobias, president of National Right to Life, speaking at the 2019 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
Despite cries that the group is under this huge funding attack and what are they going to do if all this money, tax money, is not available, and yet they brought in $1.6 billion. People associate Planned Parenthood with abortion because that's what it does. We can call it anything, but it's cold-blooded killing, the murder of unborn children. And calling it health care does not change that.
You can listen to Carol Tobias's presentation, Making the Case Against Planned Parenthood, on a recording from this year's Making the Case Conference. We'll send it to you along with a recording of 15 Advent and Christmas hymns for a year-end tax-deductible gift of $300. Order today at issuesetc.org.
Education and edification. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Are you looking for a confessional Lutheran church in Southeast Oakland County, Michigan, just north of Detroit? Ascension of Christ Lutheran has been proclaiming the gospel and administering the sacraments since 1951. Ascension of Christ Lutheran is also a proud supporter of Issues Etc. Join us for the Divine Service every Sunday at 10:15 a.m. in Beverly Hills, Michigan. You can also find us on the internet at ascensionofchrist.org.
The Simply Classical curriculum for special needs moves at my child's pace and gives her exactly what she needs. So writes Amber, a homeschooling mother who has joined thousands in homes and schools teaching from this uniquely Christian classical approach to special education. Teach students with autism, learning disabilities, or Down syndrome based on ability level rather than chronological age. Use promo code LPR20 today at classicalspecialneeds.com. Classicalspecialneeds.com.
Welcome back. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about women working outside the home. Rebecca Curtis is our guest, co-author of the book, Ladylike Living Biblically. Rebecca, you say that there is a one-size-fits-all system for both how we educate boys and girls and how we socialize boys and girls.
Right. When your kid turns five, your kid goes to school. Then your kid keeps going to school for years and years and years and takes all the same kind of classes as all the other kids. All the kids take social studies. All the kids take algebra. All the kids take Spanish. All the kids take English 1, 2, 3, and 4. All the kids take PE. They all do it all together. And most of the kids then go on to college. College is no longer an unusual or high achievement thing to do. And everybody comes out of college expecting to get a job. Or kids might go into the military, boys and girls, same expectations, same requirements, except for physical performance. But that's a topic for another day. Or kids might go to tech school, learn something to do. But the end result is, at the end of all of that, whatever track you take, the question is, what do you want to be when you grow up? What's your job going to be? It's totally oriented to what you were saying earlier, that work outside the home kind of mindset. What is your job? And I think that's something that confuses even little girls. When you ask a little girl, what do you want to do? What are you going to be when you grow up? She feels like it's weird to say, I want to be a mom, because she knows that's not what that question is. She's supposed to say, I want to be an astronaut. I want to be a dentist. I want to be a veterinarian. That our entire way of thinking is oriented toward what do you want to do in such a way that household vocations are excluded. They're just kind of extra. They're what you do after hours. And that's something that begins very early for girls. And all the way through, they're still working toward, what am I going to be when I grow up? And what that means is, what am I going to get a paycheck for when I grow up? So at some point in this process, people who wish to live in a more traditional way, in a more integrated household economy of husband and wife cooperation, where their tasks are dovetailed rather than glued together, at some point, the wife has to be willing to drop out of the system. She has to say, maybe I should not finish my college degree because I'm probably not really going to do it once we get married, and I don't need any more loans for this expensive program. Or if she is looking at marriage after college, she has to say at some point, I'm not going to work at my job anymore. I'm going to stay home once we have a baby, probably. That's when most women decide to do it. That is going to be worth it to me, and I'm not going to be a part of this world anymore. Or maybe it's after they have a second baby, or maybe it's after someone in their family has another kind of caregiving need, where there's a grandma or a grandpa who needs more care, or someone who gets sick, someone who gets cancer, or some other condition that requires immediate caregiving. At some point, somebody has to be willing to do that, and it usually makes more sense for it to be the wife. Now, this is one of those things that is very difficult for people to accept, because we have been taught all along that that's not fair, that that is degrading, that it's not nice, that that means that one person gets to keep doing the thing they get paid for, maybe even the thing that they like, if they're lucky enough to get to do work that they like, and the other person just has to say goodbye to all that, and to start doing things that very honestly can be not a lot of fun, that can really wear you down, and that are very, very lonely. Caregiving is a very lonely job. And to be willing to do that, that is a sacrifice in the context of a totally messed up society. I think if we cannot see that, when we have really lost sight of what's true and good. If we're not able to see that caring for the people God has given to us, for our closest neighbors, our children and our parents and other members of our family who need our help, if that seems to us like a step down or something that we shouldn't have to choose to do or something that is unfair or not nice, then the terrorists have won. We have lost sight of God's call to us to serve our neighbors according to what their needs are, not what our preferences, our interests, our wants, our joys are.
Why are people with lower incomes and lower levels of skill disproportionately negatively affected by this current situation, how we structure family life?
Yeah, this is one of those things that could only originate in the middle class or higher. This has everything to do with women who are more equipped to complain about things, taking advantage of that equipment. It's only someone who is not worried about money who can say, this is boring. I don't like it. I don't want to do it. If you don't have enough money, then getting more money is the only thing you're going to be concerned about. If you're the kind of person who is free to say, I want to do something else, I want you to give me that, and is accustomed to getting the things you want, then those are the people making the complaints. So all of these social changes are born out of people who are more socially advantaged and more economically advantaged, wanting something else, wanting something other than what they've been given. And in the days when it was expected that one worker should be able to support a family, a spouse and children, everyone benefited from that. But when you take that away, when you have it normalized for people to be entering the workforce on an individual basis, employers notice that, and they no longer need to provide either a family wage or the kind of benefits, especially health care, that families were able to count on in ages past. Furthermore, female workers are more expensive for employers, and this is another thing that we just have to be able to recognize. Female employees are more likely to not come in if a member of their family needs help. Female employees are more likely to get pregnant. So that means either that they are simply no longer available to the employer, they might quit altogether, or on the basis of maternity laws that have been passed by the government where employers are required to either provide paid maternity leaves or at the very least keep a woman's job for her until she comes back to it, that's another expense that employers are going to pass on to workers. So everybody's job is worth less. That paycheck everybody wanted so much is now smaller because of these changes, because women are more expensive to have as employees and because people are raising all this stink about family wages because they say it's not fair. Why should one worker's income look a certain way simply because he's married and has children? Well, okay, forget all of that. Throw it all out the window. But who does it hurt? It hurts the people who earn the least money, the people who aren't free to make complaints about doing things they don't like and say, hey, I want what you have, give it to me. just like when the elites of our society, the movie stars and celebrities, start normalizing things like divorce and having children out of wedlock, the people who are most hurt by that are the people in the lowest positions in society who adopt all these bad habits, but without all of the money to fund it and pay for the problems that come about as a result. This change in the workforce structure also hurts the people who have the least financial absorbency built into their personal economies. They've got no way to make up for the fact that their paycheck is smaller. And so they end up being more in want than they would have been when everyone cooperated with a system that rewarded stable families.
Rebecca Curtis is our guest. When we come back, she says that people will only choose to have the mother stay home if they see a qualitative benefit. We'll find out what she means by that. If you're looking for a Christmas gift for a child, grandchild, or godchild ages 2 through 7, purchase the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for December, Angel, Angel, What Do You See? Follow Mary and Joseph, the donkey, the innkeeper, and the shepherds to discover that this special baby is the Savior, born for you and me. Learn more about Angel, Angel, What Do You See? By calling Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040, or at issuesetc.org. Angel, Angel, What Do You See?
This week on The Word of the Lord Endures Forever, we'll study Jesus feeding the 5,000, Jesus walks on water, the food that perishes and the food that lasts, Jesus as the living bread, and Jesus giving his flesh for the life of the world. Join me, Pastor Will Wheaton, as we continue our walk through St. John's Gospel on The Word of the Lord Endures Forever, your daily verse-by-verse Bible study on demand. TheWordEndures.org, TheWordEndures.org.
Deaconesses are women trained to share the gospel of Jesus Christ through works of mercy, spiritual care, and teaching of the Christian faith. The word deaconess means servant. Find out more on how you can serve in the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod through the vocation of deaconess at lcms.org/deaconess. Working in faith, laboring in love, remaining steadfast in the hope of our Lord Jesus Christ. LCMS Deaconess Ministry. lcms.org/deaconess.
Pedal Pushers is the Lutheran Federal Credit Union Ministry of the Month for December. Pedal Pushers decorates the Lutheran Hour Ministries float for the Tournament of Roses Parade. When you use your Lutheran FCU debit or credit card for a qualifying amount of purchases, they'll give you cash back and give that same amount of money to Pedal Pushers. Learn more at lutheranfcu.org. Good for you, good for the church. Lutheran Federal Credit Union, lutheranfcu.org.
We love our on-demand listeners. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Do you need a rest from the world's headlong rush to Christmas? Someplace where you and your family can slow down and prepare for Christ's birth at the church's rather than the world's pace? A midweek evening Advent service is the perfect time for your first visit to a Christ-centered, cross-focused Lutheran church. Learn more on the Find a Church page at issuesetc.org or send an email to talkback@issuesetc.org.
Listen to the best of the church's music for the Advent season at lutheranpublicradio.org. Sacred music for the Advent season. LutheranPublicRadio.org. Welcome back. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. Rebecca Curtis is our guest. We're talking about women working outside the home. Rebecca is co-author of the book Ladylike Living Biblically. Rebecca, you say that people are really going to choose to have the mother stay at home only if they see a qualitative benefit. What do you mean by that?
This is what Senator Warren's book is getting at also. she says that there is a major benefit to having an available caregiver within a household, because that builds in that flexibility, that absorbency that most households need when something kind of messed up happens, when you have someone who requires care, whether that's a young person or an old person or a sick person. But it can't, like you said earlier about taking care of kids, that can be really hard to see, because it does feel a lot like I'm sitting here in my house waiting for something to happen. I'm, you know, waiting for a kid to trip over the cord of the iron. I'm waiting for my mother to decide that she wants to take a bath right now. I'm waiting to see how this chemo treatment went and how my brother feels after it. It can feel very unproductive, and all people want to be productive. That's a normal, good urge. You have a problem if you don't want to be productive. So recognizing that can be very difficult, especially for people who, you know, who are either burned out on caregiving or think that it looks unappealing or think that their particular talents just really don't lie there. That's hard to see, that qualitative benefit that it brings to a household and to even to an extended family, if everybody's just looking at what I want to do and what I went to college for and what I like doing and what I can get a paycheck for. Then looking at the idea of being more available, having more time to offer, can be very difficult to see. So I think again, we owe a debt to Senator Warren for really recognizing that, for pointing it out, for saying having an available caretaker in your family is a huge advantage. Even if you can't see it every moment of every day, it's going to build stability into your personal economy that you will not have otherwise, and that you will be very relieved to have if and when you have a need for it.
I'm intrigued by your offhand mention before of kind of the physics definition of work, and I wonder if it might help us see a way of demonstrating that qualitative advantage that you've mentioned so often here. So you got work equals force times distance, and it's measured in joules, I think.
Right.
The force part is pretty simple to figure out, because you kind of have to do what you have to do,
right,
in your circumstances, where you work and things like that. But the distance is, if we could rethink distance and the end product, that it isn't measured in joules, but you said before, now it's always measured in a paycheck. That's the only thing that's worth doing in the mindset now. Can we change people's minds as to what represents progress, distance, and what represents the end product, or what the end product actually be, to break out of that mindset that it has to be money at the end of the measurement, has to be money at the end of the day?
Yeah, I think actually a useful way of thinking about this is, think about your own church, the parish you attend. How does it run? Do you hire a cleaning service, or do you have volunteers cleaning your church? Now, that's probably going to depend on the kind of community you're in. So I grew up in a small town that became kind of an exurb and is now really a suburb of Chicago. And it was big enough that we paid cleaners. But now I attend a small church in a small town, and our church is cleaned by volunteers. Any economy that relies on volunteers is, I think, somewhat better equipped to understand this. Because volunteering is where the time of a caregiver goes when she has any to give. First of all, she's giving it to the person who is the object of her care. Again, whether that's a child or an elderly person or a sick or disabled person, her contribution, her productive work, is the time that goes into caring for that person. Then any additional time she has beyond that, I'm saying she here, certainly there are men who are caregivers also, but again, normally, reasonable people can look at situations and say, makes more sense for the lady to do this. Any additional time she has beyond her caregiving is going to go into volunteering for the other things she cares about, to her children's school, to her church, to her community. And that is what we lose when everybody's just running after a paycheck, because those people don't have any time. When you are the available person for your household, your currency is time. And there's a really good article in The Atlantic by Emma Green, who's their religion writer, where she talks about this. She says that what America lost when women entered the workforce was volunteer service. Now women are all nurses. They used to run hospitals administratively because they were the people who did the charity fundraising and saw to those details of caregiving that we now pay administrators to do and pay nurses to do, and certainly they were paid nurses before in those times as well. But that's just one example of the kind of contributions that women used to be more free to make because they weren't wage slaves. They could choose to serve the institutions they cared about, especially schools and churches and social institutions that helps people, such as hospitals, because they had time for it. And what we have really lost is that time and willingness to volunteer, again, due to our prioritizing of getting money rather than anything else. So I think that that is how our thoughts can be redirected, and to understand that better, what is the distance we're going? It's the distance that we can go towards serving people more immediately. First of all, those to whom we're given the immediate care for their body and life, but then the greater circles of society in which we participate, our extended families, our churches and schools, and our communities as a whole. That's what women are free to do. Anyone is free to do, but women especially, that's what they're free to do if they aren't tied to a paycheck and an employer and a boss outside of the home.
The question then finally that the listener is probably asking here, is it a sin for a wife and mother to work outside the home?
Right. That question, I don't think it's a great question. It's putting the cart before the horse to a large extent because of the fact that our society and our economy has changed so much that there are people who really are not free to make that choice. Again, the smaller a person's income is, the less free they are not to work. And so it's a question that hits people disproportionately. So I, you know, there's no chapter and verse for women should not work outside the home, although there is chapter and verse for women are to work inside the home. That's Titus 2:5. But I think that's a question that really does have to be considered on an individual basis. And I think that when we consider it, we do need to factor in that the reality we have now, where it is normal for women to go to work, it is somehow normal, and this is so perverse, but it is somehow normal to expect a woman to leave her six-week-old baby with some other person all day long until that kid graduates to the next level of daycare and the one after that. That has all grown out of sin, for certain. It has grown out of greed and selfishness and pride. So although any individual family situation is different, and some people's financial situation is such that they really must have two incomes at this moment, that is built upon a less stable family economy. It brings a lot of insecurity into overall household function. And it has come to us as a result of a whole lot of different social decisions, most of which were not good and were badly motivated. So the world we live in now is not something that we can argue with. If every woman who is not totally on board with all of these ideas quit her job right now, which is an absurdity that could never happen, but if she did, it wouldn't be enough. It wouldn't be enough to get most people out of this bind. So we do have to deal with reality as it is, but we also have to be honest with ourselves when we're making our own decisions and say, who am I looking to serve here? Am I looking to do what is best for those people to whom I am beholden and toward whom I do have duties, my children, my parents, other members of my family. And, in a broader sense, my church and my community, not the global community, but the neighborhood and the town in which I live. Is my decision to be available to them or to be mostly unavailable to them, is that based in something that I can't change or something that I could if I were willing to make some sacrifices? There are people for whom there is a choice. And we can say, well, is it really a question of Christian freedom? Oh, maybe. But even Christian freedom has to be Christian. And we have to be prioritizing the needs of others, doing what is best for our neighbors, rather than this complex equation by which we come up with, and I get to do what I wanted to do anyway. We have to be really honest about that.
Rebecca Curtis is a pastor's wife and mother of 8 children. She has a master's degree from Concordia Seminary. She's co-author of the book Ladylike, Living Biblically. Ladylike is available in print, online, and as an audiobook. Learn more on the Talk On Demand archives page at issuesetc.org or call Concordia Publishing House 1-800-325-3040 and ask about Ladylike, Living Biblically. Rebecca, thank you.
Thank you.
We'll be talking about woke campus outrage with Dr. Alexander Riley, professor of sociology at Bucknell University, right after the break. Please include the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. in your year-end giving. With 3 weeks left in 2019, we're $110,000 short of expenses. You can make a secure online gift at issuesetc.org. You can also make a year-end tax-deductible donation by check. Make your check payable to Issues Etc. and send it to Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Thanks for listening, and thanks for keeping us in mind at the end of the year.
Ed Crusum offers Bible-based, Christ-focused Christmas ornaments in various sizes for church and home. Use our Jesse Tree collection to teach your children this Advent and see our new premium ornaments, a crucifixion tableau, angel and shepherds, the Holy Family, Epiphany, and much more. Visit adcrusum.com for unique and theologically sound greeting cards, jewelry, gifts, churchwares, banners, certificates, and housewares. That's adcrusum.com.
Educating a new generation of Lutherans, you're listening to Issues Etc.
What is the Lutheran Witness? Simple. It's a monthly magazine on faith and life, theology and culture that helps readers interpret the contemporary world from a Lutheran Christian perspective. Filled with expert insights, good writing, and inspiring stories, it also provides essential church information for LCMS members. What is the Lutheran Witness? Simple. It's the flagship periodical of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, and it has been for more than a century. Visit cph.org/witness to subscribe today.
Looking for a foreign language program that will revolutionize your students' vocabulary knowledge and their understanding of grammar? How about a program that teaches critical thinking skills, too? Look no further than Memoria Press's Latin curriculum. Students of all ages can use these Latin study programs. Give your students the gift of Latin today. To order, visit memoriapress.com and save $5 on your next order by using the coupon code LPR20. Memoria Press, saving Western civilization one student at a time.